Hi, everybody. Welcome to Heat, Spotlight on Women by Women in Hollywood. We're here to call out stellar work by women in all parts of the film and television industries and share some shows and films we're excited about.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm a writer and painter, and my brand is Kick-Ass STEM Women.
I'm Heather, a writer from San Diego.
Hey, I'm Sasha. I'm an LA-based filmmaker and horror writer.
Hey, I'm Marie, the funny feminist screenwriter.
Kiki, a scholar and producer and advocate for the arts.
Hey, y'all. I'm Carrie. I'm a writer, director, and actress.
Today, we are delighted to feature female-identified directors in film and TV. We chose this topic to highlight amazing women directors, and we all have our faves. Chat us up on the Hot Redhead Media Facebook, Insta, and Twitter X anytime and tell us yours. For lay people, a film director is a person who controls a film's artistic vision and scope while guiding the crew and actors in making visual entertainment that tells a story according to that vision. Depending on budget and producers, the director has a key role in choosing the cast members, production design, lighting choices, and overseeing the creative aspects of making the cut.
Hey guys, how excited are we? This is our first episode. Yeah, so who's excited to get started talking about some films and shows that we've been watching?
Hey, that's me. Totally. This is so fun, ladies.
Yeah.
I know, and I'm excited to talk about my pick too. What did we all choose?
Well, I guess I'll start us off. My first instinct as the horror person here was obviously to pick a horror director. We've got some great ones like Jennifer Kent and Lee Janiak. I actually went really nostalgic and went with Gina Prince-Bythewood because of the movie Love and Basketball, of all things. It actually came out in 2000, and it was the very first movie I ever consciously saw a woman of color as the director. And obviously, representation matters because that was a moment where I was like, oh, this is possible. So I absolutely was all about this movie. It was the first DVD I bought. And I just love her and her direction and her path. It went from this big romantic kind of movie to The Old Guard and King. I think she's just a fantastic representation of what is possible. And obviously, 12-year-old me was all about it.
Do you remember what you thought was so cool about her directorial choices?
Being a person of color and growing up in the 90s, where you did not see a lot of that, I was excited to see the cast that she picked. Because normally when you see African-American folks in films of that era, it's very stereotypical. It's very gangster. It's very this and that. And this was something very new and different. And it was, like I said, that first conscientious moment.
I love that. And I love when you start to see something done filmically that opposes the operating expectation of what people are used to seeing. I like when there's more opportunities for people to do different things.
Yeah. And honestly, even especially with that movie, it is about a woman who, because usually when you're watching, especially a romantic movie, it's, oh, you can have your love story or you can have this career. And this movie is literally about you can have both. And I love that.
That's a woman after my own heart, a career and a romantic story all in one lifetime. Yes.
So is there basketball in it? Love and basketball?
Yes. Actually, the WNBA had not been around a very long time, comparatively speaking. And at the end of the movie, the lead female character actually joins the WNBA. So she's the full basketball star at the end with the husband and the kid, which was also something that you didn't normally see in the super early 2000s and late 90s. It existed. I don't want anyone to come for me, but it wasn't something that I got to see a lot of until then.
Isn't it amazing how an artistic choice like that touches so many people just to see those things, right? It just amazes me. It's almost like cultural vision presenting more worlds to us. And then I find these things inspiring personally, like as a human, when I watch this stuff like this.
A film ahead of its time, Sasha. What an amazing pick. And thank you for highlighting this amazing director. I just love it. I want to go see the movie right now.
You should watch it. It's Love and Basketball is, again, I'm more of the slasher run and hide from the killer kind of person, but there's something about that movie that just every time I see it, I have to stop. It touches me.
Says a lot.
Yeah, And I think that might be a fairly rare thing too, to have an athlete's movie or athletics movie that's paired with having a woman's aesthetic at the helm. I mean, are there many of those? I think that sounds pretty unique and cool.
Honestly, yeah, I can't really think of a lot. There are movies I've seen where both are athletes and it takes place in that world, but very few. I mean, this one's a full journey from childhood through college, through the majors. So
Yeah, there's a lot of coming of age for men.
Yeah.
A lot, you know, the boy and then how they become a success. Can't think of one for a woman, though. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, especially where the coming of age has to do with her goals. Love is there, but it's also like she has these goals that are really driving her.
Yes. And even when the goal, and that was one of the best things, is like even when the goals seem out of reach. I love that it had a happy ending that felt realistic, is what I'm going to say.
And I love that it's about basketball, because I'm thinking like movies like Bring It On and movies with cheerleaders, or I'm thinking how many woman-centric dance-related movies there are. And I have to say, I'm a sucker for every single one of them. I watch them all. But it is cool when there's a different sport than you're used to seeing associated.
Yeah.
Good pick.
So awesome.
Sasha. Sasha, who played the lead in Love and Basketball?
Shanae Latham.
And is she a real basketball player?
No, she is an amazingly brilliant actress with which, back to my horror roots, she was the star of Alien versus Predator, if you're into that sort of thing.
Wow. Awesome. She's choosing cool roles.
Yes. What an amazing arc she has.
Oh, awesome.
Shooting hoops and killing aliens.
That sounds like an awesome Saturday night to me.
All right, Jennifer, who did you pick? Let's bring on more choices into this realm.
Okay, I chose Kelly Reichardt for her film, First Cow. It's such a beautiful story. It's about a skilled cook named Cookie who traveled west and joined a group of fur trappers in Oregon. And then he has this really intense connection with a Chinese immigrant named King. They collaborate on this successful business. They make these things called oily cakes, which is the precursor to the donut. In 1820, there's also a cow in it.
I mean, not to be too intense here, but how does the cow feature?
So in 1820, and this is before they had covered wagons, so it really was the first cow, like this dude who's English, this cow, and there's actually a scene of the cow going, like they built a raft cow, and it went down.
Oh my gosh.
And then it's for milk, obviously. And so it's a big deal that they have a cow, and so then that parlays into the story. Go and they steal the cow's milk. I don't think I'm giving anything away.
Plus, I feel like this would make an amazing video game. Like, spin this off like a cow on a raft and like
the cow first.
Yes.
You know? Milk the cow on the raft so he weighs less and can larger through the port.
No, it's got to be a female cow, Carrie, because that's what.
Oh, yes.
Women buy the cow if you can get the milk.
What?
Okay. So, what were the directorial choices that were interesting that she made? What more can you tell us about her role as director?
I really like pacing. She starts it off in this big long shot of this big long barge. And so I think that you see the whole barge going by and you're like, what does this mean? And I think it just sets it up for this film has a slower pace. Like, what's it like, 1920s? And there's this really gorgeous shot of Cookie picking mushrooms. Such a soft scene where he's just like slowly going through and then picking the mushroom. You can hear the little pop and then putting it in this cloth. And it's just very soothing. It's just very, she has a really good rhythm. And there's beauty in it. There's not like gorgeous shots. Check this out. It's more of just like the contrast between light and dark and the foliage of the forest. They were dirty too. And I think that she told them, you're not supposed to bathe and you're supposed to just wear the same clothes. So it was real. And you could feel that. You could feel that sense really living in the 1820s in the Oregon forest, because that's where they were. Also, she wrote it and she always writes with a partner who writes short stories. The dialogue is really good. It's sparse. Everything makes different. There's nothing throwaway to it.
There's Native Americans in it, and they speak Chinook jargon.
They have a translator, and they found someone. That made it created more of an authenticity. And in the 1820s, they all lived together peacefully. This was where everybody died. Because Native Americans, Chinese, Russian, English, they all lived together. So it's surrounded by this fort. And the cow.
And the cow. Yeah, I mean, let's not discount the lead actor.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And this cow is gorgeous. I'm telling you. Cow in your life. And it's also a really good actor. And when they scouted for the cow, they went to Washington State.
Oh no.
And they found
this cow. I'm gonna hate myself for even saying this. They had a cattle call for the cow.
Oh, hey-o.
Nobody hates me more than I do right now for that joke. I'm sorry.
No, I'm there for it. I'm there for it.
Again.
Were there some holy cow moments in the movie?
Oh, God, the bovine puns are just going to come flowing.
We need more, guys. I would give one, but I'm being a coward.
Oh, God. You are finally would like this joke back.
Wow.
Does the cow have a name?
I'm going to tell the story.
Oh,
and no one's going to interrupt me. So it can go.
Sorry,
no. They go and scout the cow in Washington State, and they find this cow. He's beautiful, and she's 2 at the time. And she's just like, oh, well, she's really cranky right now because usually she's the first cow, meaning the first cow milked. And so the director was like, the scouter, the cow was just like, oh my God. And her name is Eve. So she's like, first cow.
I love that.
And I think she had more roles. Very attractive. And she's a great cow actor.
And I just can't think of any other cow actors either. One time ago. So yeah,
I think that's awesome. But it sounds like a beautiful and interesting film with a really cool historic context.
Yes.
So,
yes. Yeah. And one more thing, the precursor to the donuts, it's called oily cakes, and it was made by the Dutch. And they used to put a ball and they would fry it, and inside would be a nut, sometimes fruit. And that's why it's called a donut, because there used to be a nut in it instead of a hole.
That is amazing piece of trivia.
Amazing. Honestly, you changed my life. I don't know if you gals know about my obsession with donuts, but I'm from Boston, so we have maybe 2 local donut shops, and it's otherwise like Dunkin' Donuts everywhere. Like, you know, you get to one Dunkin' Donuts because it's across the street from the one you're currently in. And there's so many amazing local donut shops in LA. I've just been going donut crazy. So now when I talk people's ears off about donuts, I can add a little historical fun fact. Yeah,
I'm East Coast trash, so I would go across the street to the new Dunkin' from the old Dunkin'.
I feel you.
Well, it was a big deal because they wouldn't have made the oily cakes without the cow, and that was their business.
Or the nut.
And they're just like, what? And they go, what's in this? And the Chinese immigrant says, ancient Chinese secret.
Oh my gosh.
Where that term was called. And it's the cow, but it's the ancient Chinese secret. We now know the ancient Chinese secret is milk. Wow.
Which is really weird because I think a lot of Asian cultures don't really drink milk, right?
Aren't
a lot of people and intolerant?
I think it more had to do with racist commercial of the ancient Chinese secret.
I think
they're writing it in 2019. He's just saying that because they can't say that it's milk because
Well, that sounds like an awesome movie. I want to see that one too. I guess I'll go next. Is everybody cool with that?
Yes, Hannah.
Okay. I pick Madi Diop, who is this amazing female director because I fell in love with her film. It's called Atlantics, if you watch it on Netflix right now, or it was originally called Atlante in French. And there's so many cool things to shout out about this particular director and this film. For one, Madi Diop is the first biracial female director to be winner of the coveted Grand Prix at the 2019 Cannes Film Festival for this movie. So that's huge. And this was her debut feature, and it's so beautifully done. It's just kind of a visual poetry. So I guess I'll tell you a little bit about the story. It's a story that has a female protagonist, which is awesome, but it's kind of like showing an entire generation of young people in Dakar in Senegal. And the protag is this young girl, and she's enmeshed in this forbidden love with an exploited construction worker who's not getting paid. And so there's so much that's really cool about this because the politics is truly authentic to what's going on in that region. There's a lot of the conflicts going on between the West African class issues and things like that, and also the way that Europe is being looked toward and looked back at. So you can see like a duality in the lenses that are going on here, which is really cool. But what's awesome too is I'm watching this thing and I'm like, oh, I'm watching this love story with this beautiful young Senegalese girl. But then you realize she's actually arranged to be married to someone else. And that she's going to get married anyway. And so there's like all of these religious and cultural things that are going on all at once in this film, which are so neat and so wonderful. And anyway, the boy she's in love with, the construction worker, he abruptly emigrates to Europe only to go missing just before her arranged marriage date. So, yeah. So you're like, what am I watching? Am I watching a love story? Am I watching this? You're kind of like thrilled and just entranced by it the whole time. And what I think is super exciting about this film is not just how Diop depicts a diverse and beautiful array of the people in Senegal, but also the masterful work she does with letting the personal story of the female protag give dimension to the cultural and class tensions in Dakar.
Is this a contemporary story, Heather?
Yes, it is. It seems very contemporary. And what I like about it too is you see depictions of her beautiful teenage girlfriends, and you see like a different way of living than you're used to seeing represented in terms of American film. So you get this kind of window into Dakar in Senegal that is just amazing. And the other thing that's so neat about this is that the authenticity of the depiction was so important to her that the director hired all the people, all the leads, all the main roles, everybody in the film from local youth who actually were living in Dakar.
Yeah.
So the lead actress, this is her first filmic role. She's actually a girl from there bringing that kind of real representation of her life there into the movie, which is really cool. So I'll say just a few more things. I could talk about this movie forever just because I think it's something, because you're like, is it a love story? No. Is it a ghost story? Maybe. Is it a class politics story? Yeah, it's kind of that. But what else? It's one of those movies that just keeps opening like a Russian doll into more dolls of what you think is fascinating about it. But yeah, so some things I really like that she was doing as a director. And I did kind of compulsively then have to go watch a bunch of her earlier short films just because I was just to see where this came from, where what was maybe something that had developed in her directorial style. And some of the things that I thought were just a wonderful kind of escalation of her skill and techniques from some of the earlier work where she loves to do this thing with the play and overexposure of light. It's just like visual poetry. It's so cool to watch this film because it's just amazingly gorgeous. Like your eyeball is so happy. And then the amount of colors that come through her scenic movements that create this kind of surreal world in which her characters are living in.
That sounds beautiful. And is it in English or French or Wolof?
It's in two languages. I believe it's in French and Wolof, but there might be a third language in it. Somewhere I've seen different, I was looking it up and on some sites it was saying there was two and on other sites it was saying that there was three, but yeah. And it just feels so authentic and so cool for that reason too.
It's like Diop really works very hard to make sure that her audience has a full immersive glimpse into this unseen world. Do you really feel that resonates from watching the film?
Oh my gosh, yeah. And what I love is that in a Eurocentric culture, you might say that something is magical realism, or you might say that something is one thing or another, but you get the sense that Diop is embracing both her West African culture. Her father was Senegalese and her mother was French. So you can see the undercurrents of all of this in-depth knowledge about being in both places coming through the film. So I feel like she's really giving you that depth in a lot of ways, and it's really cool. But then the other thing that feels very traditional and French to me, because I'm a big French film fan, like she couldn't have hit more bells for me. She couldn't have ticked more boxes because I love French films. I love ghost stories. I love magical realist type narratives. I love when it's a weird ass movie that maybe doesn't fit the standard romantic narratives. So all of these things were really working for me. I love when there's a lot of metaphor and a lot of the feeling of a bigger white space of a story that maybe you're getting the visual choices the director is making. So this is what's happening with this as well. But also she brings this very French feeling aesthetic in terms of the intimacy she creates for the watcher with the actors, the way that she chooses the scenes where you're very close with the characters and you can actually see them thinking. But I don't think you see that as much in American film where characters are not speaking and they're not really moving, but they're thinking. Am I right?
There's a lot of thinking in First Cow.
Okay.
I think there must be, Jennifer, and the watch
of the cow.
No. Of the cow, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, just pick a reason why this film is awesome. It could be because it's absolutely gorgeous how it was filmed. It could be because it tells a fascinating, undertold story. It could be that it brings that level of authenticity. And it could be just the choices she made or having such an amazing female protag represented that I don't see in other films. But this one, I would watch everything that this person creates. I'm interested in Diop's filmmaking, and I would definitely keep my eye out for the next thing from her.
I'm so excited that you brought this in because I just am really excited to hear about her and her work. And I feel like I'm just going to watch this like later tonight.
Me too. Yes. Thank goodness. I feel inspired by all the choices thus far. All three of you ladies bringing some incredible female filmmakers and incredible film choices. And they're just so authentic. All three of the films mentioned so far. I'm just so excited to watch all of these films later.
We are going to have amazing watch lists, curated lists from this series. I am super excited about that.
Yeah. Yes. This is exciting. Yeah,
Carrie, awesome. Do you want to tell us what your pick is? I'm excited to hear what you picked for the episode too.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to talk about one of my favorite female directors, writers, filmmaker, Chloe Zhao. And I am going to highlight her film, Songs My Brother Taught Me, which was her debut feature film that she wrote, directed, and co-produced with Forest Whitaker. The film came out of the Sundance Institute workshop that she was part of. And from there, she took the concept of the film to South Dakota. And she was there for a few years before the film was actually shot. She was really under a lot of pressure. She did receive a $100,000 grant from the Sundance Film Institute to make the film, which is very, very low budget. And she had written the script over 30 times, 30 different drafts that she ended up scrapping at the very end and went with a very loose form script of only about 15 pages of a dialogue, pages of an outline with not much dialogue, actually. And she only had 5 crew members. And she went from trying to cast actors to play locals. And it luckily ended up going with her gut feeling to just capture stories about the Native Americans living on this Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And she zeroed in on a sister and a brother, their relationship and how it relates to each other, the reservation, and an overall arcing of how the people that live in these native lands, how their lives relate to each other so closely and the lands they live on. So captures a story very loosely, organically, by just allowing space. She didn't have a lot of resources, but I listened to an interview she gave in 2020, and she talks about how she just used the resources that she had, which was time and space. And she had all of this physical open space of the landscape of the Lakota American lands. And she said through opening up and trusting, the story evolved and sort of wrote and told itself, and that she felt she was there capturing it. And so she zeroes in on this brother and sister and their relationship with each other and the question if the brother is going to leave the reservation when he graduates from high school to be with his girlfriend that's moving to Los Angeles or stay on the reservation. And it beautifully describes his relationship with his sister, his relationship with the land, and ultimately he decides. Zhao really is known for her incredible different camera action in that she moves the camera underneath the characters very close to their body. So as the audience sees the film, it's from the perspective of character, the actor and his or her motions and what that character sees visually from their point of view. So there's a lot of tight shots and then those tight shots against long sweeping wide shots of the landscape. And very interestingly, at the end of Songs My Brother Taught Me, films at the white clay of the Sioux Native lands, which are these uniquely rough, rugged cliffs that has this powdery white clay that just goes into the air and dissipates. She does this beautiful shot at the end. And there's a voiceover of the main character, which is the brother, talking about how the lands relate to him and guide him and how life is somewhat of a mystery. It's just a beautiful film. And I feel very excited to talk to you all about it. Even though this film received a great amount of acclaim and success, it was premiered at the 2015 Sundance Film Festival. It also screened at the Director's Fortnite section and received a Camera d'Or nomination, Best First Feature Film at the 2005 Film Festival. Zhao felt at a very low point when this film was completed. She had a lot of trouble getting funding for her next film project, which was called Writer, which was filmed in 2000 about rodeo riders also in South Dakota. Interestingly enough, she has a love for the South Dakota plains because when she grew up in China, she would often visit and spend a lot of time in the Inner Mongolia regions that have a very similar landscape. And she feels very connected to both both of those landscapes and finds the similarities in them. So the good news is Zhao went on to incredible success a few years later after she completed Writer, and then she went on to Nomadland. She is the female director to win in an Academy Award for Best Director. It also won Best Film at the 2020 Academy Awards, and she is the first woman of color to ever win Best Director, and it took to take place in 2020. Very, very long overdue. To date, Zhao remains the only woman of color to win Best Director and is still only the third woman to receive an Academy Award for Best Director. I feel that Zhao is an incredibly courageous filmmaker who tells authentic, untold stories about people's lives and how their relationships with others and their connection to their native lands really shape their lives. And her ability to really tell that person's story is incredible. She's really a hero filmmaker to me. And I feel the world is a better place because of the story she has shared in the art form of film. And I give huge props to Zhao for how courageous, innovative, and authentic she is. And I highly recommend all of her films. They are stunning, beautiful, really heartfelt, and authentic. So thank you for allowing me to share.
That sounds beautiful. I saw Nomadland and it was so atmospheric.
Yes.
Like she is really connected to the environment that you about the space.
Yes. It's interesting. She puts the camera as an additional character in her film, even though it's from the point of view sometimes of her characters or actors. The camera kind of takes a step where it too becomes a character in a very unique way and tells the story from either the actors looking up and their view and also from the land to some degree. Very unique way of framing shots.
That is so cool. And I love the Native American focus to the film that you're bringing to us today as well.
Thank you, Heather.
Helly Reinhart, we also talked about how hard it was to get her second film made.
Yes.
Yeah, it's 12 years to do her second. Yeah, I think it was 12. It's hard. It's hard for women directors to get the money.
And, it really is.
The boys get the money for their dumb stuff.
It's so true. This has been an issue for decades. Did you know that there were tons and tons and tons of female directors when movies were first made, writers? I'm talking about silent film. We started so strong. And then just, it was like when talkies came in for some reason, they were like, nope, don't want your voices. So that's why women like this are so, so important.
Well, most definitely. Most of the biggest directors during the silent era were all women. It was like a rare unicorn to see a very prominent male director during the silent era.
Don't you feel like that's like, if you think about this is like a sad state that sounds like, that sounds like itself like a fantasy movie. It's so hard to even believe it. It's so different now. Like I'm putting myself in that place on that time.
I said rare, but let me rephrase in that most of the ones that I've heard about and seen in books when they're talking about prominent silent features.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about like the Chaplin or anything like that. Because let me rephrase. There are exceptions to what I just said.
No, but it's just such...
It's pretty amazing and daunting too. Like, I have to tell you, I was just glancing at it because the Wikipedia page for Academy Awards for Best Director happens to show a picture of every single person who's won it going way, 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 way back. And of course, the first female director to win was Kathryn Bigelow for The Hurt Locker. Which is, by the way, the answer to Keke's trivia question. So shout out to who was able to get that answer early.
Yeah.
I know, right? Pretty amazing. But then Chloe Zhao, Nomadland 2020, it's cool that back-to-back, Jane Campion for Power of the Dog,
yes.
2021. So women 2 years in a row, 2021, 2020. I think that's at least a frequency that is much better than what we had seen with the earlier awards, right?
Yes.
I was really surprised that Sean Hader didn't get for Coda, which ended up winning Best Picture, and she won Best Adapted Screenplay. I was really shocked when she wasn't nominated along with Jane Campion for the dog.
I was too, Sasha. Excellent point. Coda was really an incredible film, and I was hoping she would win Best Director, but it didn't happen.
I was glad that they at least gave her Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Picture, which look on her face, you could tell that she was absolutely shocked.
Yes, she was. But it was an incredible film.
Yes, most definitely.
Definitely deserved Best Picture.
Well, I think we should go to Kiki's choice next. Kiki, can you tell us about your film?
Well, the film that I selected is called Queen and Slim, and it was directed by Melina Mancukas, and it was her feature directorial debut. And like most films by Black women, it didn't get the love it deserved. Queen and Slim. Queen and Slim is a classic hood romance in which both the male and the female protagonists die in the end, like Romeo and Juliet. But people say that Black people can't do Shakespeare, and I wholeheartedly disagree. And Melina Matsoukas has given us just a phenomenal piece of what the culture looks like with regard to tragic relationships.
And what do you think that she did that was amazing in terms of her directing?
It was just really true to life. She's a successful woman, and she goes out on this Tinder date with a guy that she never expects to see again, ever. And they have this weird ass, crazy ass run-in with the police, and in self-defense, the police officer dies. And now these two Black people, this Black couple, is on the run, and they fall in love while they're on the run. And then they die at the end, just like Romeo and Juliet.
And do you think it's cool that she picked this particular film? Or like, I was watching the trailer for it and I just thought it was so beautiful. I loved the way that the color in the scenes was coming through. I loved the choices she was making about how close she was getting to the actors. And I just thought it was so visceral and cool how the choices.
It's definitely. And there's one still that I see a lot where the young man takes the picture of both of them and they're sitting on the car and Slim is looking at the camera, but Queen is looking at him.
Yeah.
And it's just like the epitome of what Black women are expected to do and provide in their relationship, to look at their man while their man looks at the world. And nobody expects anything of their relationship, but they still love each other.
It sounds like a really powerful story. And I read that it was at the same year of the 30th anniversary of Do the Right Thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So our focus this time is on directors and what they're doing, what they're bringing and what they're choosing and how those choices are so powerful. And I'm wondering for you, what do you think are the choices that create great work?
I feel like the choices that create great work are the choices that are closest to lived experience. Honestly, I feel like a director can take a story and paint it through the lens of their lived experience. It's automatically going to pop, male, female, or indifferent.
All about it.
Yeah.
We all want to see what's true. We don't care about the lies. We want to see something that's lived, something that's passionate, something that could possibly be scary because life is a trip, something that is going to tug at your heartstrings.
Yes.
Something that might make you cry. Me personally, in my real life, I look for opportunities to piss people off because when they're angry, that's when they're going to move. You're not going to move if I don't make you mad.
Oh, dang.
You know? and people hate that about me, but it's one of what I feel like is my most endearing qualities.
Dude, hard agree, dude.
And I love that she got to work with that super talented actor. Wasn't the guy in this movie the one who was in that awesome movie Get Out?
Daniel Kaluuya. Yeah, he was in Get Out. And, you know, I love horror. And I'm sure Sasha and I will have an opportunity to dig into how much we love horror here. And I can't wait for that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be so neat. So do you know anything about what has this director done otherwise? Has she made other films that are exciting as well?
I don't feel like she's done any other films, but I do know that she does music videos and commercials. And I feel like Melina most recently got a producer's credit for Beyoncé's Renaissance film.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to what she has for us in the future. And I can't wait to see what that is.
And I loved a couple of the moments that I did see. I haven't seen this film yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. But I loved the strength of the woman who's the protag in the film, too. And I love the way that that comes through. If that
absolutely.
Makes sense.
And it makes a whole lot of sense. I really understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, very cool. Well, some of the other co-hosts were talking about the idea of the way, I think Sasha was saying, actually, which is really cool because you mentioned her horror thing. She was surprising us by not picking a horror film this time.
Not the time.
I know. She's like, I'll start us off.
We don't want to start off on a bad note, okay?
Yeah. But you know what she did pick, which was really cool, was the Love and Basketball film because of the agency of the female athlete in that film. And because she thought it was so cool to have that film that celebrates this amazingly talented woman getting what she wants in love and career and having this kind of celebratory film that explores what women need and want as well.
Absolutely. And I feel like it's really unfortunate that the societal mores cause people to view women the way that they do. But I feel like with what we are doing, we'll definitely be doing our part to ensure that women are seen as the people that they are outside of any gender mores.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Most definitely.
This film sounds like it's going to make me cry though, Kiki.
No, it will. It will make you cry. And I feel like after you watch this, you might want to go watch Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, or whoever directed that new Romeo and Juliet that they did like 20 years ago. Yeah. So after you watch Queen and Slim, go watch that Romeo and Juliet, and it will all come full circle for you. Just like it did for me.
That sounds amazing.
Awesome. Well, in terms of women's empowerment, I think Marie should help us out with the next choice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have to talk about Barbie. We have to talk about Barbie, right? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I have this, I don't know if you know this, I have this obsession with motorcycle jackets. I have a black one, I have different colors, and I had this pink one that didn't exactly 100% fit me right, and I'm about to donate it, and then I'm like, the back of my head, I'm like, what would Barbie do? No, this my pink motorcycle jacket, I'm keeping it, and now I'm wearing it all the time. Just because
pink is back.
Pink is back. It's a power color. Greta Gerwig, I feel like she's, you know, those people that just, they're just genius. You're like, I'm witnessing genius happen. And so I'm obviously, like, I'm a writer. And so anyway, directors amaze me. And I've done acting. And when you're like, you know, and when you're an actor and then a director directs you, it's like all of a sudden the words on the page have so much more. You're like, wow, I didn't even see. It's just like, it's an amazing what a director does. But I just feel like what she accomplished in terms of explicitly talking about complicated topics in a film that you could be bringing your daughter to talking about patriarchy and just the way that every aspect of it, just the way, like, she really, really prompts you to actively think and actively engage. And that she did it with this brand that is just kind of a complicated brand. Barbie has a complicated history. You know, just a lot of Barbie super fans and a lot of Barbie, like, not super fans. And she managed it to really address both sides, right? Like, address that Barbie was introducing the concept of careers. Like, I don't know if you know this, but the Barbie, I don't think this came in the film. I think this came in my research, that Barbie went to the moon before men did. Like, there's a Barbie astronaut. You know, Barbie was really doing something. It was like this doll that had her own money and her own jobs. But yet, body image, we can't get around body image, and that there is sort of a consumption culture around Barbie. Like, you know, you buy the dolls. But she really, I think Greta took all that on such love and affection. And I think that she did it in this way that didn't judge. Like, it makes you want to think about it and engage and start conversations, which is just really what we need to do. Just look so excited for what she achieved and, gosh, everything about it, like her use of color, the way she sort of played with the dollness of it and nostalgia, right? Like remembering how you would interact with these dolls. And yeah, and then yet, like, there's the truth teller, right? Of like what it's actually really like to be a woman. I just feel like she just did everything so brilliantly. And I actually think Margot Robbie, like, needs to be mentioned because her production, like her role as a producer was so big. She and Greta, they had to invite Mattel into a script that challenged Mattel, and they had a lot of meetings with them on a script. I heard an interview about them. They're talking about, you know, like on a script, you don't have some of the tone you can't quite gather. And they were just like having to build this trust with this brand that, like, yeah, there's critique in here, but it's going to be presented warmly. So there's just so much she did. And then her ability to direct humor, just, oh my gosh, just amazing. Gosh, just amazing. Yeah. So I feel like I'm so inspired by her. And I've watched this movie. This is the first movie that I actually purchased, probably over a And I am proud to say the only other things I would buy on DVDs, which was not movie, was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So I feel like I'm doing okay, right?
The movie really does break down barriers from this stereotypical societal notion of a Barbie doll. And I love at the end how when Barbie becomes real, Greta couldn't help herself but put in a public service announcement because checks into her gynecologist were a pap smear. So if you have female body parts of any kind, please do get those house parts checked when it's the appropriate time. He's saving women's lives along with this movie that really opens up dialogue and breaks barriers.
I see. This is the thing about this movie. Like, you notice that. It's like every time I watch it, I notice something new.
Yes.
Although I do have to tell you, I really want a Mojo Dojo Casa house like that.
I would really like us. And I had an ugly Barbie that had marks all over her that my little cousins cut her hair and put like purple. I was like, did they model ugly Barbie after that Barbie that was at the bottom of my Barbie collection? Because I had that exact Barbie with like that purple stripe pin mark on the face. Oh my gosh, that was so brilliant to me.
It was weird Barbie, not ugly Barbie.
Weird Barbie.
I mean, Greta Gerwig is also 3 for 3. I mean, she went from Lady Bird to Little Women to Barbie.
She and which all I love those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like she also added, I don't know if she added, she sort of raised up some also like women's role and women's feminist stuff in Little Women that kind of already in the story, but she just, it was like really cool to see someone like, I don't know if alter is the word, it's just like elevate certain aspects of a story that to really
amplify.
That's what the word is. That was like really
modernize a little bit for a modern message.
Yeah.
And I think it's so cool how playful she was with Barbie, because it's almost like it's bringing you the nostalgia if you grew up at a time when they had Barbies. Like I had a Barbie airplane, I had a Barbie swimming pool where you would pump this little thing and it would shoot a little shower upon your Barbie to wash out the invisible chlorine your Barbie had absorbed. Yeah. I had a Barbie horse. I had multiple Kens, definitely had Barbies that had destroyed hair and all of these things too. And so, but what's cool about it is even filmically, I love how she caught those moments where they were exactly the things you would pause and think about as a child playing with the Barbie who is eating / not eating the food, drinking / not drinking the drink, right? I mean, so I think the playfulness was super fun for me about that movie too.
Yeah.
And the dialogue was really good. Like, I felt like it was, to me, I was like, oh my God. When they said one of the characters was just like, you know, I can use logic and emotion at the same time and it doesn't deplete me, it's expansive.
Yeah,
that's my homework.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. And the soundtrack, I mean, the way she like incorporated music with some of it had dialogues and jokes, you know, it had written in, right? And it was just like so brilliantly done. And then What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish, I did one of those things where I like listened to it on repeat till like 4 a.m. at one point. And I was like, whoa, Marie, like you've been touched by something when you do that. So did you all as kids understand the back and forth things? Like for me, I feel like at some point, my mom was definitely allowing me to play with Barbies, but I also had some consciousness, maybe I'm guessing maybe going into my tweens, because I don't really remember it exactly, of that, like, this still isn't, I guess, the body image stuff. I'm like, when did I become aware of that?
I didn't ever have a Barbie because she was blonde and blue eyed and I have brown hair and brown eyes. So I had PJ the camera doll.
Ooh,
had brown eyes. It was pretty anti-Barbie. I mean, my brother had G.I. Joes. We didn't have a Ken. Because why?
He's just Ken. No, I was definitely the tomboy type. So my baby sister collected Barbie dolls and I collected the Ninja Turtles. So I was actually really surprised by the Barbie movie because I was not a person who played with Barbies. Obviously, as you guys know, I have a very unique...
Yes!
Gotcha, do tell.
So I worked on the LA unit as a crew member for that movie. And I was, you know, I wasn't sure what to think. And if I could say, you were crew on a film, one of the most important things to you is the director, because that's going to determine how your day goes. And a director who is easygoing and kind and knows what they want, which is the most important thing to everybody on crew, knows what they want and how they're going to get it. And Greta Gerwig knew what she wanted and how she was going to get it. And honestly, it was something, I've worked on dozens and dozens of sets, and it was something watching her work. You know, I mean, it was Barbie, so I don't know what I was going to go, was going to happen. But obviously, I got to read the script a little bit while we were filming. They were only in LA for 2 weeks. The rest of the movie shot in London. But I remember reading the script like in a trailer with the door locked so that it wouldn't get out. And just, I honestly was starting to get kind of pissed off because I was like 15 pages in. And I was like, why is the Barbie movie script this good? Actually making me mad. I was like, it's going to be like, because I really loved what we were doing. But like, as I'm reading the script, I'm like, this is going to be so good. So when it came out and it was like, I was not surprised. Usually when you're working on something like on set, you're like, oh, I hope this turns out good. But but this was one of the first projects where I was like, oh, this is going to be brilliant. This is going to be absolutely brilliant.
Amazing. You had that inside knowledge. I mean, how that have been for you to know that and not want to like burst out about it. How exciting. What an incredible experience. That's just amazing. Thank you for sharing that, Sasha.
That's awesome. That's totally awesome. Okay, I need to add something just because I didn't get to add my little response to Marie's question about body image and Barbie. I have to tell you, I played Dirty Barbies a lot as a child.
I did a little too.
Okay, the Ninja Turtle person needs to know what Dirty Barbies was.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like. It's like a bad romance novel where all your Barbies are humping each other and cheating and all of this stuff and whatever.
There was nothing there that always mystified me.
It was. Yeah. Okay. So like that was my point here is that my body image thing was never focused on Barbie. It was always that Ken had a nothing, that Ken had a lump. So it made men feel very innocuous as my Barbies would hump away at their sex parties or whatever they were doing. Yeah, I'd like to thank the Barbie Mattel industry for giving me a wrong impression of men very early. No. Well, that's why you would make a weird Barbie, because your weird Barbie would get tired of your humpy little Ken who was cheating on her or whatever.
I drew nipples on...
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought what's interesting about the script is how much they portrayed Mattel in kind of like this evil corporative way. And when Will Ferrell is just like, you've had two CEOs, so two-ish, right? And I'm wondering if Mattel will now create an answer to the film and a female CEO. You don't.
We can only hope.
We need to put some heat on that.
Nuts. But like the ghost, the spirit of the lady that created Barbie, like living in the Mattel building.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that they poked fun at her IRS problems, but in it's a loving
point, Sasha.
She was like, yeah, she's like, I'm going to take the system down in every way I can. Like, Barbie's going to have a job and I'm not paying taxes.
You go, girl.
That is awesome. Okay, so I think we have an amazing list for our listeners to go watch. I think we have quite a few beautiful, fabulous films for them that we will promote for them on the Hot Redhead Media blog. And we will go ahead and post that on the list when the episode launches. So please, anyone who's listening, feel free to clap back on our social medias for that. But whenever we make a watch list, we also make a snack suggestion. So whose snack pick is it today?
Harry! And the snack pick is, for today's treat, Portobello Mushroom Pizza Snacks. Really beautifully into Jennifer's film, First Cow. So who knew? That was very serendipitous. I did not even know that when I picked the mushroom pizza snacks. Let me tell you about this easy, fun, gourmet, delicious, healthy snack. It takes 15 minutes from make to bake. You can direct your own signature toppings. So a few portobello mushrooms, your favorite marinara sauce. Also places like different markets sell like even pizza sauce you can add. Top it with some fresh mozzarella or a plant-based option. Sea salt, dried oregano, and basil. So you take your ingredients. You start with your portobello mushrooms. You want to place them with the mushroom cap to the top. You brush it with a little olive oil. Bake on a cookie sheet in a preheated oven or your toaster oven. And you layer on marinara, mozzarella, and cook it for like 5 minutes. First, you want to cook the mushroom for 5 minutes. Then you put on the toppings and allow the cheese to melt. And when it's done, sprinkle with sea salt, oregano, basil, and get creative maybe. And add some extra toppings, like pepperoni, jalapenos. Mm. So the portobello mushroom pizzas are the perfect healthy and hearty movie snack companion.
That sounds really delicious. And did you know that portobellos are the adults of white mushrooms and criminis? So first, white mushrooms are the baby. Criminis are the adolescents. And portobellos are the adults. It's one mushroom. One love, one mushroom.
That is a fabulous fact.
Make that up, Jennifer. Like, is that real?
Portobellos are the adults. When I found out, it changed my life. I was just like, I didn't feel connected. This is incredible. They're a family.
It's so incredible. I love that. I feel like I've learned so much.
So Carrie, the cap side up, yeah? On this, yes. That's what you were saying? Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I think that was the tie-in to another one of the movies. But I'm gonna keep that on the down low. Yeah.
Wait a minute. And you take off the stem for the portobello mushrooms to make them, just FYI. So they're sweet with a sauce.
Mm-hmm. Wait, how does that relate to a movie? Because the capsize up
was evoking something for me.
I think we're Dirty Barbies right now.
Yeah. Sorry, I went right back there for a moment.
Exactly. I was picking up what you were throwing down.
Yeah.
I picked it up immediately. You know, evidently. What does it say about us that we picked it up immediately?
Right on Rosa, Sasha.
Well, it's still lost. So if I watch everything on the list, will I like figure it out?
No.
No, absolutely not.
It's going to be a bonus trivia at some point.
And I feel like that would make this an entirely different kind of podcast.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay.
Well, what a great transition to our trivia segment before we close out our episode today.
So, Kiki, your trivia question for the first episode, we kind of already said the answer. Hope you're not mad.
Oh, no, I'm not mad at all that my trivia question was ruined, but it won't be ruined for any of the other episodes.
Cool. Well, hey, Kiki, can you tell us what the question is that we are going to announce the answer at our next episode?
Sure. All right. So the next question, okay, pencils up, everybody get ready. For Nat Vaughn, the trivia question is, what Oscar-winning actress at 41 was warned as a child that her career would fall off a cliff at the age of 35, which is something she said she knew a lot of women face, but then said the thing that has evolved during that time is that more women are having careers deeper into their lives, which I think is fantastic.
React if you know the answer on Hot Redhead Media's social media post posing the question. Thanks again for listening to Heat, Spotlight on Women by Women in Hollywood. To check out our newest watch lists and audience snacks anytime, please check out www.hotredheadmedia.com for our blog posts and podcast links, which feature the curated lists. And if you like books as well, check out Hot Redhead Media's bookish sister podcast, Book Tales, where we pair custom cocktails with newly released books. Subscribe to Heat, Spotlight on Women by Women in Hollywood for more episodes on women reshaping the narrative in Hollywood. Episodes released once a month. Thanks again for listening and sharing our great love of championing women in film and frame. Till next time, stay awesome. See you soon.